the buzzer been poured on its way. Oh, oh my goodness! Oh.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
D Square, how was life? Your NCAA tournament is over. Ohio State won because you obviously fixed that whole thing. We understand that. We understand you have a little invested in it and everything. But all right, we're in like week three now, and we're going to have Rick Pitino on today in a little bit. But what's day-to-day life been when we really would be usually getting ready for the NCAA tournament Final Four this week?
Seth, you know what? You were awesome with helping me get through that tournament. We had fun doing it. And as a radio talk show host, Seth, I don't want to talk about the coronavirus. I don't want to talk about – I want people to have an escape. Like, a little bit like this. We're going to have Coach Pitino on, and you know, we're going to talk ball. We're going to talk everything he does. And I think it's important that everybody's aware of what's going on, and everybody should – be doing their best to be safe. But in my world, I'm trying to have fun with the kids at my house and try to make people laugh or pissed off or entertained or whatever on my radio.
You can do that in one sentence.
I know, right? I know. So that's kind of it, right? I mean, it's funny. You were last week, you were talking about Maury Hanks. We got a guy, Jim DeSale, you may know him. He was a Converse rep for a long time. He's here in Indianapolis as an assistant at one of the high schools. I've known him for 40 years. They reported him as died this morning, and now I'm hearing maybe not. So this corona thing is real. This corona thing, please be careful out there. But, on my radio show, I'm trying to give people a bit of an escape. Let's put it that way.
Well, Maury Hanks is doing better. They took the breathing tube out from him, and hopefully he's on the way to recovery. I did a crazy thing today. I had Tyler Cameron, the guy who lost in The Bachelor, has become a friend of mine. We did a clinic with him for ABC Tour, Food Tours here in Hartford. He came in. It was a great success. So I actually – he has this exercise class every Tuesday. You know, you can tell from the body. So I put his exercise class for about 10 minutes through defensive slides – denials. All right. And then we gave a little talk. So we're all trying to do a little bit of things outside the box. But a guy that's not doing something outside the box is a guy that was a big part of kind of my basketball education growing up through the five-star camp. He's had a journey that very few of us have had. And, you know, how many guys could say they coach the Celtics, the Knicks, Louisville, Kentucky, and one of the most historic franchises in Europe? And now he's the head coach of Iona. So, it's great for us to welcome in the new head coach of Iona. Even though he doesn't have Iona gear yet, he's wearing Minnesota gear, same color. And that's Hall of Fame coach Rick Pitino. All right, we'd like to welcome in Rick Pitino. And Rick, I got, before we get into your journey, I mean, and Dan knows, Dan, did you go to Five Star?
First guy I saw, Coach Pitino. He brought Aubrey Sherrod. He brought Chris Mullen onto the court, and he beat the out of all of them one-on-one, and he was at Boston U, and I went up after and I said, look, I'm supposed to go to Indiana, but I want to go play at Boston U. And I was sitting next to like some kid named Robinson, who was a great player, went to Carolina, and he and I were ducking, hoping we didn't get called out by Coach to beat the hell out of us.
Well, first of all, before I get to the story, he was undefeated, but he called every stinking foul. And if you played in 3-on-3 or 4-on-4, you had no chance.
All I know is in that little gym up the hill, he brought, like, Aubrey Sherrod was the greatest player. And, you know, he beat the shit. I mean, he killed him. And Linwood Robinson and I.
Linwood Robinson. Like,
oh, man, don't pick
North Carolina,
us.
Right? North Carolina, Linwood Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, if he was that good at UMass, people wouldn't even know who Dr. J was.
You know, it's funny. I said to Goff one time, I said, Goff, I called Patrick Ewing out, you know, to put the guy in jail in the rim.
Yeah.
I called Patrick out, and he couldn't do it. And then before that, I said, Goff, give me the best shot blocker in the camp. And out comes Moses Malone. I said, Goff, give me
Hey, Coach, how old were you? And it was the summer of 1980. So how old were you in 1980?
Well, I graduated in 74, so I would have been 26, 27.
That's what I thought you were, yeah.
And the amazing thing about that is...
I quit a BU job at 24. I played for a guy, you played for Bob Knight, and no lie, my guy would make Bob Knight on the court look easy. That's how tough Jack was. Now, by the way, a great coach. And we all, everybody who played for him, including Julius, we didn't enjoy playing for him. But after it was done, we really appreciated everything he taught us. And the AD called me up and said, look, I want to hire you. I said, well, you haven't interviewed me. And he said, it's okay. Your college basketball coach was the best player to play at BU. And he said to go get you. And, you know, you look back on it, and Jack Lehman was responsible for giving me my first break. And here we all thought he was so tough and so mean, but he was really a pussycat at his side.
That reminds me of Coach Lababa. Coach Lababa, I thought my name was son of a bitch. But after I'd done playing for him, I understood. But, you know, the thing about Rick is, you know, we all, Dan, you didn't really grow up. But we all grew up in a five-star camp, and Garth built all these bridges to help us chase kind of our dreams. But, like, Rick was the first guy that went from counselor or camper, right? You were a camper.
Yep, camper.
Camper, the counselor, the clinician, to an assistant coach. And he was the first guy to become a head coach. From all the group of guys that started as campers, and like we all grew up, and it was a slew of them saying, like, basically he was our idol because he got where we wanted to go. And we just thought, well, you hit 24, 25, you become a head coach. You know, we didn't realize at that time the journey that it took. But and I said this to you in a text, I always appreciated it because for all of us that were trying to climb that ladder, you always took the time to help us and spent time with us. You were still one of us for what it's worth. We, you know, all us younger guys really appreciated that.
You're younger than somebody?
Come on now. Hey, he's just better shape than me because he lives on a stinking treadmill. I mean, Rick, so like, here's the deal. Like, what you've been through is incredible. You went from BU to Providence, Knicks, Celtics, Kentucky, and then obviously the last stop, Louisville, which ended up obviously not ending the way you wanted. When that happened, what was going through your mind? I mean, because you're always the guy that I always thought was forward thinking. What went through your mind in that moment in time?
The 4 years that I'll always remember in my life, I'm forgetting the two championships or the seven Final Fours, but the 2 years with Ubi as an assistant coach of the Knicks, I learned so much basketball. Now, most of it was the pro game, but the amount of pressure that was on me, because back then we had one assistant coach on the bench. Richie Adubato was the advanced scout, faxing this stuff in. And for me to put the scout together on a computer back then would take you 4 or 5 hours because you're hitting buttons, stopping it. And you had to do it 82 games. And God forbid if you got one play wrong that the other team was running with Ubi. He would snap his fingers. Come on, kid. What are they running? And I'd say, pick and roll, Ubi. They're going to downscreen into a pick and roll. And if you got it wrong because they changed the call, knowing that Ubi was so organized, you felt like the world was coming to an end for you on that bench. And every timeout was incredible because he was at the top of his lungs talking to the players. And it was just – it was like being in a basketball library for 2 years. So those 2 years were phenomenal for me. And then the 2 years at Providence, for me, somebody said, do you regret leaving Kentucky? And certainly you look back on it, would I wish I would have stayed? Of course. But my biggest regret was leaving Providence after 2 years because that was a magical run, magical time. It was a small school. And probably one of the reasons why I took the Iona job was I was hoping what Vital told me was true, that Jimmy B said the best years of his life was at Iona College. And really the best 2 years of my life were at Providence College. So I'm hoping to recapture those moments. Leaving Louisville, look, it was 15 great years. I look back on it. I made a lot of excuses saying I did nothing wrong. It may be the truth. Like my son says all the time, he says, Dad, nobody cares about the truth. So stop saying you're innocent. Stop saying anything. I take full responsibility for who I hired. because for 30 some odd years, I get so many accolades for hiring Billy Donovan, for hiring Jim O'Brien, for hiring Ralph Willard, Tubby Smith, over 30 terrific coaches out there. Went on, my student manager at Kentucky is the head coach of the Lakers. I coached Brett Brown of the Sixers. I coached Rick Carlisle of the Knicks. I coached Billy Donovan of the Thunder, plus 30 Division I coaches. Now, the last two or three guys, I take full responsibility for who I hired. It didn't work out. And unfortunately, it ended poorly for me. You always like to end on a high note. It ended poorly for me. So I took off for Greece because I loved the game. I took off on Christmas, didn't know anybody there, was all alone. And I was doing a podcast with Brett Brown. And if it wasn't for that podcast, I wouldn't have gone. Because I said, Brett, how did you end up in Australia? He said, Coach, I was out of college 1 year. Didn't know. I asked my dad if he'd pay for a plane trip. He said, to where? I said, Australia. He said, well, who do you know there? He said, no one. I packed my bags. Years later, I played a little bit. I coached under Coach Gaze, became the national coach, then worked for Pop. And I said, you know what? If Brett Brown can do it at age 25, I can do it. And I just took off at age 65 for Greece, not knowing anybody. And it was two unbelievable years. Matter of fact, I sat down with your brother in Tel Aviv in Israel. We talked about old times. And I not only was it a great experience, but I learned a lot. And, you know, when you're in your mid-60s and you can learn that much more basketball, it was awesome for me. The offenses that they run in the EuroLeague are phenomenal. Their defense is not as good as ours, but their offenses are awesome. 7-8 passes in a span of 7-8 seconds. Then they go downhill. Then they go backdoor. 80% of the passes are bounce passes. So I loved it. It was great. But Iona flew over to Madrid with their president and AD and with some pretty tall aspirations of what they want to become. And I said, yes.
That's awesome. You get to Greece and obviously your success, right? I mean, you know, you walk in with some cachet, obviously big time. How difficult or how easy was it to get players to play the way you wanted?
You know what it's like? It's like having second round draft picks, terrific college. Like I had Jim Rafidette, Nick Kalathis, Deshaun Thomas from Ohio State, plus six Greek guys that played in the States as well. Four out of six did. And they're just humble guys who made it a little bit in the NBA. I had Wesley Johnson this year. Great guys that want to learn, want to get better, want to really – the salaries probably are not going to be on time each month. Sometimes they're a month or two late.
They paid your ass, though.
Yeah, they're going to get paid. My pay was so small, it didn't matter. But it was just a great experience because they're regular guys. I remember sitting in a Tel Aviv airport at midnight. We had like a 1:30 flight. Nick Kalathis came to me and says, Coach, what are you doing? I said, I'm reading a book. He said, come on, we'll buy you a beer. I said, this is the first time in my life a professional athlete said, I'll buy you a beer. And we sat down. All the guys talked about the game. We lost a close game. And they're just great guys to coach. The EuroLeague is really a special league. It's not as strong as it once was because the NBA's taken all their players.
What was the hardest adjustment in terms of like coaching your team? Like, what was the hardest adjustment like in terms of preparing for a game, staff size? Obviously, you weren't chartering.
Cheska from Russia charters, Barcelona charters. Their budgets are like $40 million. Our budget was $12 million, 12 to $15 million. Even though Panathinaikos is like the Celtics, they've won six EuroLeague championships. So the budgets are different, but about five or six teams totally charter. We didn't. We ride and coach, and us 6'10 guys are sitting in those middle seats. So it's a little bit different.
Coach, you mentioned going back to, you know, Kentucky, you'd have liked to have stayed. When you look back at yourself, what was it for you? Was it like, you know, a lot of people follow Larry Brown. I think Larry Brown's the smartest guy ever to coach. He just keeps moving. Everybody pays. You know, he's wins. But was that kind of the philosophy, like, I got to get out of here before they get me kind of thing?
No, but I think because I started a little bit different than Larry. I started so young that I was always trying to move up the ladder. At BU, I took the assistant coach of the Knicks. Bernard King goes down. We're going great. And Bernard goes down, and Yubi said to me, he kissed my forehead when I got on the bus. I never forget this moment. I said, Yubi, I'm going to stay. I'm going to turn down the job with Lou Lamoriello. And he kissed me on the forehead and said, kid, Bernard just went down. And back then, you didn't come back from an ACL. And he called me kid. He said, kid, take the Providence job. It's not going to go well for me. I said, no, Yubi, we'll turn it around, Yubi. We'll turn it around as a young kid. And he said, without Bernard, we're not going to turn it around. And sure enough, they won 23 games the next year, and Yubi got fired. And I wound up after an interim coach had taken the job. There, I didn't – Al Bianchi had a different philosophy, much different philosophy. He wanted to play slow like the bad boys of the Pistons. We were averaging 116.8 points per game. Back then, only one team in the league did not break 100. So it was much different. And everything was going great. We won the Atlantic Division Championship with the Knicks. And then Kentucky came in, and at first I turned it down. Then they went after P.J. Colissimo. And then they came back after me. I think it was in right after we swept the Sixers in the playoffs. And that's when I decided to take the job.
There's no way that Kentucky was ready for PJ. That would have been a classic.
PJ said to me, he said, I don't know what a single guy in Lexington, Kentucky would do. I said, what are you talking about? Lexington's a great town because I visited them on my trip. He said, no, I'm a city guy. I said, no, you'd love Lexington and C.M. Newton, because C.M. Newton, one privilege I've had in my life, I've worked for great athletic directors. I worked for Lou Lamoriello at Providence, John Simpson, who's deceased, at Boston University. I worked for C.M. Newton at Kentucky, Tom Jurich at Louisville. I worked for awesome guys. And now the AD at Iona is a young man and also a great guy.
You leave Kentucky, and because of your ambition to go, the Celtics offer this deal, you got to take it, right?
You know, I made a lot of excuses. I said, I went to college at UMass. I have a lot of college buddies living there. Two of my children were born in Boston. And I made up like 10 excuses. And then, of course, I said the Boston Celtics. But at that time, I signed a 10-year contract and they paid me $50 million. So, you know, and that was unheard of back then. So my 10 excuses, if I would have really looked in the mirror and said it was really the Boston Celtics and then the $50 million.
Coach, I remember I was an assistant in Indiana, and I remember when I heard it, I was taking a walk with my wife, and I was so damn happy because you used to beat our ass every freaking year. And I'm like, good, he's gone. We got a chance now at Indiana, because it was always miserable after you beat us either in freaking Freedom Hall or you beat us in the Dome. But I always, you know, for a guy like you to be able – I know the money's a lot, but it had to be special to go coach the Celtics, right?
It really was. You know, I had unfinished business with the Knicks. And Boston only won, I think. I was taking over a job that won 14 or 15 games. And we thought we had two picks in the top six. Duncan was the grand prize. Van Horn was the second prize. And sure enough, the 8% winner was San Antonio. We got the worst possible scenario. We got 3-6, which was unheard of.
It's unbelievable. So
we got Chauncey and Paul Pierce later on. We got Chauncey and Ron Mercer. Paul Pierce the following.
What did you learn from that experience? Like what did you learn from like say quote unquote failing?
Well,
what did you learn from that experience?
We took it from 14 to 38, but two things went wrong. First of all, I should have never ever been president as well. I didn't know enough about being a president of an organization. That was a mistake. Although Chris Wallace ran most of the stuff, I should have just focused on coaching, what I think I do best, not being president of the Boston Celtics. Dave Gavitt talked long to me about it, convinced me that I needed to be the president as well. That I wasn't cut out for. The Celtics, we got it, but we had one major problem. We were on our way, and then Paul Pierce got stabbed 10 times and almost lost his life. And that killed the season of improvement for us. And then the following year, that was the year prior was a strike. So I learned that to be patient, because I traded Chauncey Billups for Kenny Anderson because Portland, my president's hat on said, we saved $10 million. Portland will pay his salary. So we saved $10 million to use down the road. Chauncey goes to Denver. He then gets traded from Denver to the Pistons. And I should have been I remember Cousy and Heitzen having a fight, an argument on the plane. The argument was, I went back and said, guys, do you think Chauncey Billups can be a point guard? Because he was turning it over a lot at the time. And Cousy said, coach, it's going to take a long time before he becomes a point guard. Heitzen goes ballistic and said, no, he'll be a great point guard someday. And they almost come to blows with an argument in the back of the plane. And they were both right. Cousy said it's going to take a long time. He got traded from Denver to Detroit. And Heitzen was convinced that Chauncey would be a great player someday. And I was too impatient. I should have stayed with Chauncey, stayed with the young guys. And I didn't do that. So I made some personnel mistakes that I regret.
Coach, over the years, you've obviously been a lightning rod and all that stuff. How frustrating is it for you to read or watch something that you about you or about a program you're running that is just simply not true?
Well, you know, I wrote a book, San Patino, my story, and everything in it was the truth. And somebody wrote another book called The Last Temptation of Rick Pitino. And I can say this, Dan, in all honesty, and I say this with all humility. My ego was way too big in basketball to ever think about cheating. I wouldn't, you know, like when I play golf, if I mark the ball incorrectly, I think God's going to screw me and I'm missing the putt. I think that way. I'm wired that way. My ego is such that I would never succumb to cheating. I've never given $5 to a player in my lifetime. Now, am I responsible for people that have done things under me 100% and I deserve to be fired? That being said, I don't believe in any form of cheating. I believe in hard work, player improvement, getting after people and doing it the right way. And that's how you win. I preach that. And I've always said to the people, what's most frustrating is not somebody taking a shot at me because I deserve it. The program, I got one player that I loved. My captain is bringing strippers into a dormitory through a side emergency door with a master key. That's despicable behavior. And I taught him different than that. And so did his parents, the two beautiful people. But the one thing I do know is if you speak to any player that has ever played for me, any coach that's ever coached under me, he will say the same thing. He's never cheated. He's done it the right way. He's always a great point average. He's always demanded you go to class. He always demanded you get the most out of everything in your life. So is it frustrating when people say that? It is, but I deserve it because of what happened. So I live with that. But if somebody will just speak to Gary Plummer from BU, Tony Sims from BU, if they'll speak to Billy Donovan, if they'll speak to Delray Brooks, if they'll speak to Antoine Walker, Ron Mercer, Derek Anderson, Nazi Mohammed, Mark Pope from Brigham Young, any of those guys, or then the list of 17 years at Louisville, they'll all tell you the same thing. Ask Donovan Mitchell, ask Terry Rozier, ask Gorky Zhang, ask Peyton Siever, Russ Smith, Kevin Ware. Ask any of them. They'll all say the same thing, as well as every assistant coach. The man was too tough on us to ever think about cheating. So frustrating, yes. Deserved, yes. So I live with
it. Don't play golf with Dokic because I'll tell you one thing. He'll try to do whatever he can. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. And yes, he has one more win against me than I have against him, but he's relentless on the golf course. The guy's incredible. Don't play golf with Dokic. All right, so now you're in Iona. What do you get to your staff, which is so important? As you said, like I look at the assistants you had, whether it's Van Gundy, whether it's Stu Jackson, whether it's Billy, whether it's, I mean, you can go right down the list. It's like a who's who in basketball. So you hire your first hire. By the way, tell Abbott and Marco before we get into them, can we get you some Iona gear? I mean, like, I understand the colors are the same, but the Minnesota stuff has got to go. I mean, Coach.
Well,
I mean,
I was
come
going,
on now.
I was going to go to New Rochelle, and then it's the headquarters for the coronavirus. I can't get in.
I mean, it's unbelievable. But I mean, like putting together your staff. I mean, now you've been at it for a while. How'd you put together your staff, Iona?
Well, now paranoia sets in. Now you realize that you better hire the right. Here's what I told my guys. I said, guys, I have two strikes on me. Nobody will believe if I get a third one. So I'm telling you right now, I'm going to check every single thing about you. And I checked Tommy Batamako out. He's 70 years old. He told me he was in his 60s. I found out he was in his 70s. he probably forgot his age. So then I hired somebody who worked for me before, who is an Iona College graduate, Casey Stanley. I know what he's all about. I know his integrity. And then I hired the guy who was there because the AD, the president, everybody at the school recommended him. And I kept Scotty Davenport at Louisville. It was great going into it, and I kept him. And then I hired somebody, a good friend of mine, Chris Beard from Texas Tech, recommended his graduate assistant, who was an assistant at Air Force. He told me his integrity is impeccable. So I think I've got a great staff, but the number one priority is making sure they understand the word integrity and understand, you know, a lot of these guys just think cheating's the norm. You know, they just think, oh yeah, everybody's doing it. I used to say it was less than 6% until this stuff came out with the FBI. And I realized that what was going on, once the shoe companies and AAU basketball evolved into college basketball, the game has changed forever.
When did that start? When, in your mind, shoe companies?
Well, remember now, and I say this, look, shoe companies have made all coaches wealthy people, yep, have made all universities very wealthy. But what happens with shoe companies is they control the AAU programs. The great ones get paid more. So it becomes very competitive, like our business. And now the AAU companies are infiltrated by runners and agents. So it's shoe companies, it's agents, it's runners, part of some of the AAU companies, and then some parents of players, some parents are consultants for the shoe companies as well. In AAU basketball, in all forms of it. So there are so many ways that cheating goes on. Back when we started out in the business, there was the five-star, and then later on there became Sonny Vaccaro and the ABCD camp. But there was no AAU. Runners and agents weren't part of that. And there was no shoe companies back then. I think my first deal was Pony, maybe something like that. So that didn't exist. But now there's just so many entities involved in college basketball that there's more of a percentage that cheating could go on.
Well, you had a, you know, you sued Adidas. You went through all this stuff. Will you take shoe money at Iona?
I would if they would give me it, but they're not going to give it to me.
Well, you're Tino. Are you crazy?
You know, I think if I did get offered it, just like a guarantee game, if I get a guarantee game and I want to take a guarantee game, I can use that money for the program. The same thing, if a shoe company would pay me money, I would use it for the program. You guys will get a kick out of this. I'm not getting paid what Coach Kluse got paid. And I told them I'm not interested in the salary. I'm interested. I want 5-6 years. I want to go out. I want to build it into something special. So they were very happy to hear that I was not interested in the salary. So nobody knows this. I'll say it for the first time, and it's okay to say now. So I get the contract. And it's much less than what they told me Coach Kluse was getting paid. Nothing with what's been reported. But I look at the five-year buyout. Now, the president and I, the reason I got hired is the president was from Transylvania, Kentucky. He knew me, came to some Louisville games. He knew my business partner, Rick Avar. And so we knew each other. He knew what I was all about. If that wasn't the case, I wouldn't be hired at Iona. So I get the buyout for the 5 years. Now, my buyout at Louisville, I was there 17 years. I think it was $200,000-$300,000. I think it started at $500,000. My buyout at Iona is $10 million, $10 million, $5 million, $2 million, $2 million. And I said, I called up the president. I said, Seamus, I think there's a mistake here. He said, no, I told you the salary. I said, no, on the buyout. The buyout, I've never heard of a person having a $10 million. Coach Kloos had a very high buyout of, I think, $3 or $4 million. He said, Rick, that's not me. That's our board of trustees. Well, Seamus, you said you believe in me. You trust in me that I want to end my career at Iona. He said, I believe in you and I trust you. I know your integrity 100%. But there's not one board member that believes in you.
Yeah.
So,
that's perfect.
So go Gale.
So all right. So go Gales. Look, I know you don't do anything unless you like have a plan. Your vision. We saw Jimmy V, you know, Roland, Vickers, Hamilton, Madison Square Garden, playing Louisville. Like, what's your vision?
Well, I think Gonzaga has a great playbook. Because we're not going to change leagues. So our league is a good mid-major league. So that's not good enough to get a decent seed. So what I have to do is go play a great non-conference schedule. So far, we're playing Oklahoma State in the Garden. I'm trying to get a second game in the Garden against a top five, top 10 team. I have to go on the road, obviously, and play some teams. So it's going to take a year or two to get that type of schedule. The good thing is, I probably can't talk recruiting, but recruiting's gone great. I can say that. So the good thing is the program's down because Coach Kloos got sick. And by the way, he did a phenomenal job at Iona.
Coach.
Four out of five years in NCAA. I think it was 7 out of 10. He did a great job. Now, I'll recruit differently than him, but I won't rely on as many transfers, but that's what he believed in. That was his moment, had great success doing that, but he did a phenomenal job. So now we got to take it from there, what the great foundation that he built, and get back to what V did, playing some big time schools and getting, quite honestly, we got to get some 4-pluses and 5-star basketball players.
You walk in and you're going to recruit junior college, high school, whatever you walked in. Do you have to answer for your past, or is it automatic in both ways? Do you have to answer for your past in terms of anything negative, or is your past such that, hey, man, I want to go play for Rick Pitino?
You know, it's funny. I made about 15 to 18 phone calls, and we got 6 commitments. And not one person brought up anything about the past except positive things. The coach saying, I remember you when you were the Knick coach. Somebody said, remember when you were the Kentucky coach? Remember when you were in 2013, I was in Atlanta. Not one person asked that question. Now, maybe they were too embarrassed to ask, but they didn't. And we've been very fortunate because everybody likes the style, believes that we'll turn it around and play some big time schools, and really didn't have to sell too much.
Rick, if you play non-conference games in January and February against big-time opponents, I know we'll put them on. I mean, that's the big-time thing, you know, the time of the year that you can get nationally televised games.
Well, told me that the Jimmy V needs one opponent this year. There's openings, and I'm hoping because the school wants to retire Jim Valvano's jersey. And what better way to do that than at that game? So I'm hoping, sure, if there is an opening in the Jimmy V Classic, I don't care who we have to play, I play anybody. I would love to be part of that.
Nick on line one. What, you know, will they help you build facilities? I like, and obviously it's always an arms race. What you did at Louisville with the practice facility with the, you know, Billy Minardi, athletic, residence hall. Well, is there room? Is there a place to enhance your facilities?
Well, we built. They spent $60 million renovating the small arena, and that's fine. What we have to do, obviously, is build a practice facility. But you know what's funny? When I went to the Celtics, they were practicing at Hellenic College with no practice facility. We had to build that. We built a $150 million facility. Yeah. Kentucky's facilities were awful. Now they did have the Wildcat Lodge where the players stayed. Right. But the practice facility was Memorial Coliseum, and that was run down a little bit. They had no weight room. That had to be built. Louisville had no practice facility. Yum Brands committed money to it, and that had to be built. So it is an arms race in college basketball right now, but that's really not Iona College. It's a small campus. Now, Providence College is a small campus, and they built a beautiful practice facility. But I don't think Iona has those resources yet. I think we are building a brand new weight room, and I'm focused on that more so than anything. I think playing in the Garden three games a year, going on the road, playing some big opponents, going trying to get in a Battle of Atlantis, trying to get in the Maui tournament, I think that's the way to go rather than try and build a great facility on campus.
Can you just call the Garden and say, look, I want to play? Rick Pitino, what the hell? I just want to play in the Garden.
Well, fortunately, I know the people. I even know the ushers so well. I know the people who run college basketball there. They're great guys. And one in particular, I've been on the phone with them already. And I think I have great connections there. And I also tell them, look, somebody backs out. You need a game. It doesn't matter. Baylor, Tennessee, Kentucky, I'm there. No questions asked. I'm there.
Your energy.
That's what you have to do. You have to sometimes get your ass kicked very, very early on to improve your program and go in there and compete.
Have you had a chance to talk to your current players and like your energy right now? Is this thing? I know Greece was unbelievable. It's a great learning experience. But has this even rejuvenated you and energized you to what extent? And what was the best advice Richard gave you? Now that you're back in college coaching, because I know Richard, I'm sure, had some classic advice.
You know, Richard's does a great job with the media. And he just said to me, Dad, stop trying to tell people, speak to my coaches, speak to the players. Nobody cares whether you're innocent. Nobody cares. They've already got on with their lives. Nobody cares. Just do what you do. And that's what I'm going to do. And you talk about energy. I told the president, he said, you seem like you're so fired up. You got a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. I said, absolutely not. Seamus is the president's name, Seamus Carey. I said, Seamus, absolutely not. I do not have a chip on my shoulder. I have a boulder on my shoulder. and I said, but it's not against anybody. I have a chip because I'm dying to get back, dying to get on the sidelines again. And I can't wait to get started. Now, you asked the question, did I meet the players? I talked to them all on the phone. But I haven't been back there. Neither have the players. Everybody sure. is. It's over for everybody right now. And I don't know when we're getting back in.
Coach, when you get going with coaching a college team again, and you talk about, you know, your staff, you're legendary for work. You're legendary for, hey, man, it's 3 a.m. What are you doing? How, even though it's only been a couple years, do you think players will be any different than what you're used to?
Well, what I tell them, I tell every recruit I just spoke to, I want to talk about one thing. I don't want to talk about the way we're going to play because my talent's going to dictate that. I want to talk about player development. I said, so here's what we're going to do. From 9 o'clock to 9:45, four of you are going to come in between classes. I will be there in my gym shorts working with you on your jump shot, on your jab shoot series, on your ball fake, on coming off screens, on learning how to play the low post game. And we're going to work on that for 45 minutes. Then the next group of four is going to come in from 10 to 10:45. The next group is going to come in from 11 to 11:45. And then we'll practice in the afternoon. I said, so I'm going to coach you all day long. Dan, I don't know if you know this, but the 20-hour rule was derived because of my team from Providence College. In 1987, all my guys from Billy, Pop, Lewis, Delroy, all got up in front of the media and just said, yeah, from 7 to 8, we have a walkthrough. We go through all our plays. We go through our defenses. Then we eat breakfast as a team. Then coach does an hour individual instruction, 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12. Then he practices us from 3 to 6. Then Billy, myself, Delray, and Pop Lewis would play 2-on-2 from 9 to 10 for milkshakes down in the cafeteria. And they would tell the press this at the Final Four. And that's when years later said, oh, we can't, this is abusive, you know, because the players loved it. I loved it. I was very young, still playing. And we were putting in, you know, 5-6 hours a day of basketball. And that's why we got to a Final Four, because we just loved it. It was just a ball and a dream. That's all it was.
That didn't even include the 2-on-2 games that he had to show up to play with him at 6 in the morning.
That's
with
what
the
I'm
staff.
Sure.
that he called some, there's a rumor, I don't know if it's true, but he called every foul and won every game. I don't, is that true?
Five,
or not?
5-on-5 we played.
For how long?
Well, at Kentucky, we played from 5:30 to 7 every morning, and Herb Sendek blew out his ACL playing in those games. And I think he did it intentionally.
The lesser of two evils was to blow out my ACL.
Tubby, Donna Smith, Tubby's wife, used to say something hysterical. She said, you know, he told my wife this, I'm in bed, and Tubby was so afraid of not getting there for the 5:30 game. He's wearing his jock strap, his gym shirt, and socks to make the game on time. So he leaves at 5:15, he's half dressed. So I'm going to bed with a man wearing a jock strap and sweat socks.
Rick, we really appreciate you doing this. Yeah. This was fun. I hope it was fun for you. And like I said before, I appreciate everything you did for me and all these young guys. But more importantly, hearing the joy in your voice. And he hates when I use the word joy. But like to me, if you don't have great joy in what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it. And to hear the joy in your voice is really cool.
Great, man. It's great. Yeah,
It's great to be back. I can't wait to get back with player development and see these guys for the first time, bringing in 6 new players. And it'll be exciting. It'll be fun. I'm certainly energized, especially being back in New York. I still have my New York apartment from being the Knick coach.
That was a good move.
87. So I don't have to move.
That's awesome. Well, hey, I'm getting on the phone right after we're done. I'm going to say, Tom, whatever you have to do, I know you're in Florida, get someone to print up some Iona gear for Coach. I mean, what are you doing here, man? I know, get off the treadmill, stop making recruiting calls, call someone you know, and get some gear for the man. Come on now.
Go Gophers.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you so much. Rick. Appreciate it, man. Good luck.
Thanks.
Dan, what was your one takeaway from talking with Rick?
I would play for him. Like, that's my one takeaway. And I don't say that about most coaches. I love his energy, love his enthusiasm, love the fact that he just said, hey, look, nobody cares. I'm going to tell you, and I got to move on. Because I always say this, Seth, man, we want to forgive until it's time to forgive. And whatever Coach Pitino did, he did. He suffered the penalties for it. But if I'm a kid, I don't care who's recruiting me. If I want to be a baller, I'm going to Iona. And a lot of it is, I mean, I'm not, I'm going to Iona, but I'm very interested in playing for that man because of his energy, Seth, and his just being straightforward in our talk with him. And obviously his background's legendary, but I loved his energy. I loved his, you know, boulder on the shoulder. You could feel it. You could.
Yeah, I thought that was great. It's kind of funny things that stick with you. I think the first thing is he talked about those games at Kentucky at 5:30 in the morning. I mean, he was a better player at 30 than he was at 20 because he used to play in this park called Prospect Park where we all played it. And he was good at 20. He was really, really good at 30. Number two is his apartment in New York that he owns. He owned that when he coached the Knicks. What is that thing worth? Are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me. Life is good, but, you know, he's going to do a great job. And I think hiring Tom Abbanamarco was a great move because here's a guy that just loves ball, is in it for the right reasons, was at Iona in its most glorious times with Jim Valvano. And I think it's a great message. All these ADs are looking to hire, you know, who's the next guy when there are guys out there that, you know what, you can have a bump in the road, a roadblock, a detour. But you know what? People deserve another opportunity. And, you know, to me, I think he's going to have a blast doing that. The only question I wish that we asked him, I said, so you're going to play at Canisius. You're obviously not chartering. Are you limoing or are you on that bus with those dudes?
They'll be the bus and then there'll be the black Escalade. And the charcuterie board and the red wine on the way home.
No doubt about it. But I thought he was great. We really appreciate him spending so much time with us. And everyone stay safe, stay at home, social distancing. And as Jimmy V would say, take some time to laugh and laugh at yourself, laugh at each other. You know, embrace life because life is precious. You're the best, man.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.